Now, Professor Jim Lucy is Medical Director with St Patrick's Psychiatric Hospital in Dublin and Clinical Director of Psychiatry at Trinity College, and he's with me now. We've many times discussed what happens in therapy with Jim, but today he has read a best-selling book, The Examined Life, written by the American psychoanalyst Stephen Gross, who has had patients on his couch for some 25 years, and I've been dipping into the book as well. Jim, it's an unusual book because it's very reader friendly.
Yes, good morning, Pat. It's a remarkable book because it's so crisp and easy to get into, and the stories are so tightly told that really it's a delight to read, and you can get into something about the unexamined mind, the unexamined life that he really wants you to hear about.
So what's his format?
His format is really the presentation of a human story, very briefly told, and then a consideration of it, and then usually an epiphany, some kind of insight that emerges, and then you're left with a denouement where you can ponder the outcome, if you will. But I found that format initially quite frustrating because, when he came to illness, depression or panic or paranoia, he glanced over those things very quickly. He's, not really interested terribly in those things. They are being treated in the stories often. His interest is really much more broad scoped. And in fact, once I read on, I got to really enjoy the book because you could see that he's interested in what makes all our minds tick.
I mean, I dipped into the book because it is like a book of short stories.
Yes. But I mean, that's the whole idea of the unconscious, that place in our minds that we're not really aware of, that we suppress, that we run from, is as old as time. It's been disputed throughout time, but it is really the stuff of literature and the stuff of poetry, and that's why it's so wonderful that we should hold on to it. It's also the stuff of maturity and of growth and consideration of why we exist and why we behave the way we do needs a recognition that there are things we don't understand.
Let's talk about some examples then. The story of the man with the house in France.
Yes, he gives an example of a man who contacts him, in fact, by phone in the story, to say that he believes he's going crazy. He calls his house that he's talking about his safe house. In it, he spends all his time redecorating and building, making improvements. He even plans to leave his job and his home in London to live in the safe house, which is in France, he says. He even ponders that if he were to do that, he would have to go without the healthy rental income that he's getting from letting out the house, tenants paying some money every month. But most especially, he tells Dr. Gross that in this house, there's a magic door. Through this door, he can escape from his loneliness and his frustration, from his work and his difficult times. Once, when he was in a near-miss accident on an aeroplane, he coped by thinking that he would go to his house in France via the cockpit door.
But
he then tells Dr. Gross, I don't have a house in France.
He doesn't have a house
in
France.
No, there is no house in France.
But this is his mental escape. This is his refuge.
This is a mechanism that is well known to us of, if you like, magical undoing or fantasy thinking. If you think about it, all of us have somewhere, or certainly have at times, wished for a magic house.
All right, now another one. Abby is a Jewish young woman who got engaged to Patrick, who's a blonde-haired Catholic man with an Irish background. Not myself, I think.
Could have been, absolutely.
Years ago,
maybe. There's the story to be told. Abby's father opposed the marriage and insisted on cutting her off from the family. His behaviour made no sense to Abby. He'd been previously a very loving father and they'd had a good relationship. But some years later, and out of the blue, Abby got a call from her father to say that he and her mother were going through a divorce. Her father had been having an affair since Abby was in high school. The affair was with Kathy, his secretary. And surprise, surprise, she explained to Dr. Gross, Kathy is Catholic and blonde.
So he was having an affair with a blonde Catholic.
Yes.
And he disapproved of her marrying a blonde Catholic.
Absolutely.
So what was going on there?
Well, psychoanalysts describe this phenomenon as splitting. And it's a really important one. He's very interesting about this. We can talk a little bit about it. It's the unconscious mechanism that aims to keep us ignorant of feelings in ourselves that we're really unable to tolerate. Typically, we want to see ourselves as good. And so we put those aspects of ourselves that we find shameful somewhere else, sometimes into another person or into another group. Splitting of feelings and beliefs is a way of getting rid of self-knowledge, Dr. Gross explains. Abby's father was in a terrible predicament. It was unbearable for him to think that he had fallen in love with someone outside of his own code. Once he was able to locate that problem in someone else, He lost awareness of it in himself.
So he was able to blame her for all that Catholic stuff and Jewish stuff. And
yes, it doesn't matter what the code is. But he talks about, he's a lovely phrase in the book. He says, the bigger the front, the bigger the back. The mind is a bit like a house. He says whenever he hears people in public life or in private life condemning others with vehemence, he always wonders. And he's never surprised when you find people exposed afterwards for the apparent hypocrisy of their positions.
Now, there's a man he calls Stanley, and he draws these scenarios from an amalgam of different people, but creates scenarios which are typical of the kind of patients that he has met over the years. Stanley was 77 years old and a widower.
Well, he was a father of four who lived in a very isolated and restricted way since his widowhood. He continually and bitterly complained about his children and about their partners and his grandchildren. His behaviour led his grandchildren to stay away from him, and this only confirmed his view of their selfishness. One day Stanley described a visit from his daughter, who used to come frequently and with her children and with her husband, but now only came annually. He briefly recalled to her a tender moment in the past when she'd been very young and he had read her a bedtime story. He began to cry, but his feelings of tenderness were quickly replaced as he complained of the brevity of her visit and the cheapness of her parting gift. As Dr. Gross explained, Stanley's feelings of tenderness were fragile. They were too easily extinguished by the powerful narrative of his unconscious, which was envy for his children's youth, for the family he no longer had, and for the life that they were going to live.
There's a story of Rebecca who dreams of a lover and the way he might reach out to her and touch her. It turns out she's not looking for a lover. Her relationship is fine.
Yes. She's very disturbed by this because the passion of her dream really makes her wonder. At first, Dr. Gross wonders if Rebecca is defending herself against a loveless marriage or one that is a pretense. But nothing about her relationship with her husband explains this dream. It becomes clear later that she's longing for someone else, not her lover, but the son that has grown up and left her life and has ceased to be as important as she wished he would be.
There's a brilliant story. It's about Emily. Now, Emily was a girl who was wetting the bed and who was dishevelled, and she was the middle child. There was an older, very clever child, and then there was a new baby. Do you remember that story?
I've forgotten that one. Go on with that one.
Anyway, Emily comes in for treatment, and she, as I say, she's wetting the bed. She was discovered in school trying to dispose of her pants down the toilet because she'd wet herself.
And yes.
It's very difficult. Anyway, she undergoes some treatment, and like the parents come in and they're pristine in their garb. And she, anyway, starts treatment and she gets better. And they say, well, we can stop the therapy now, Dr. Gross. And within a day or two, she started wetting the bed again. So they resume treatment and so on. And it turns out that the child, when the baby was born, a lot of things happened in the family that used to be rituals. Like her mother used to put
the
toothpaste on her toothbrush, used to help her in the bath, used to snuggle up to her in the morning. New baby arrives, mother stays in bed with the new baby.
Yes.
She's told, you have to read your own bedtime story now. You're a grown-up girl, blah, blah, blah.
Life has to move on.
Anyway, she gets better. But what happens?
Yes.
The family becomes disheveled.
Yes, he goes on. Rooted in this is the, I suppose, Jungian idea that the unconscious extends beyond one individual, but into the family or into the society, into the collective. And so the family behaves collectively in a way that it doesn't ponder and needs to understand. He has another one where a family brings their daughter who is very dishevelled and very untidy in her depression. She neglects herself and she gets well in the therapy and she gets a real treatment and a real benefit. And as she gets well, her deportment, her personal care improves and the rest of the family become dishevelled and cease to care for themselves.
So, Jim, would you recommend the book?
I would. I think it's a wonderful book because I think it really asks us to consider the part of life that we don't understand and examine that and then to come to a position where insight actually sets us free.
Well, the book is actually called The Examined Life.
Yes.
Harking back, is it to Aristotle?
To Aristotle. The unexamined life is not worth living. Mm. And the unexamined life, in our case, is the life of the unconscious. Why we lose and find ourselves, why we do. It could be to ourselves, could be our families, could be our society. We've lots of questions to answer.
All right. Well, it's written by Stephen Gross. It's published by Chatto & Windus in London, and the sterling price $14.99. But it's easy to read.
It's very, very accessible, and he doesn't add jargon or make it difficult to get into. If people are interested and want to consider the questions that trouble them about why they do and why they haven't done, they might like to ring our information and support line 249333. They'll certainly get a professional answer.
Very good. Professor Jim Lucy, thank you very
much. Thanks very much, Pat. Thank you.